Welcome to Media Mavens. This is episode 25. I'm Pam, and with me, as always, is Riley.
Hello.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. Yeah. We have a returning guest today, our good friend Sarah.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
How you doing?
I am much better than I have been lately.
Good. Yeah. That's good to hear. I know you've been on before, but do you want to quickly introduce yourself?
Sure. Hello, my name's Sarah. I have been friends with Riley and Pam for a long time, and I'm so happy to be on their podcast again. It's a highlight for me. It's really fun. Because we often have super interesting conversations and no one's recording them. I'm like, we could be on a podcast all the time. I'm the content manager at wowhead.com, and I'm currently in school. So that's my jam.
All right. So for our second part of the show, we are going to be talking about Alien and Aliens. We all just got together last night to watch them together. Uh-huh. But before that, we'll just start out with what we've been up to. Sarah, you want to go first?
Sure. We always go through the what we've been playing, and I'm always loath to admit, since you're both free of the the shackles of an MMO, the monkey on your back. But I, of course, have been playing a lot of World of Warcraft because Legion came out in August, and it's still the first tier, and we're still raiding, and there's been no breaks, and it's been really long and intense.
It's still the first tier?
Yeah, dude. They released three raids like in a row. So there's basically just been no downtime whatsoever. It's been a long haul. It's been fun. Of course, obviously there's like so many issues right now with that game. I'm still enjoying it. Obviously I'm still playing. Really, I've not been playing much else. I played the newest season of Diablo, which was as the same as always. They have not changed anything significantly, but I still love that game. I know last time I was on here, I was talking about Diablo as well. But last night, a new Path of Exile League started, so I'm really, really excited to actually finish recording this podcast and go play. It's gonna be it's gonna be really awesome. That game, I don't know if anybody's played Path of Exile, but I like cannot say enough about that game. It is the most complicated video game I've ever played in my entire life, and the game explains absolutely nothing to you about how to play it. It's been really fun to actually have to ask people what to do in a video game instead of just kind of figuring it all out on my own. But yeah, I highly recommend if you're a D2 person, Path for sure. I have been watching a lot of new stuff because I feel like Netflix is releasing a lot of good things lately. So let's say in the last while I watched Girlfriend's Day, which we were talking about last night. Everyone should be watching Netflix originals. I'm really on this bandwagon of Netflix making movies. I think it's really good for the industry, and I think a lot of smaller things that would not normally get made are going to get made because of Netflix. So Girlfriend's Day, it was like, I highly cannot recommend that movie enough. I loved it so much. And then I watched Series of Unfortunate Events, which I loved because I love those books. And then I'm watching Riverdale. Are either of you watching Riverdale?
I have not watched any Riverdale.
You would love it! Oh my gosh! Are you into it, Riley?
Yeah.
It's really good. It's so good.
It's not what I expected at all. I know that they like based things on the comics, but it is like, if you go into it expecting it to be like the comics, you're gonna be like super disappointed or like really, really surprised.
For me, it's basically, I would describe it as a cross between Gossip Girl and Pretty Little Liars starring the Archie Comics characters. Other than, like, obviously every show has problematic whatever, but there's just, I love the atmosphere of that show, like the aesthetic I find mm-hmm. so appealing, and it has some of my favorite actors. Luke Perry is in it.
Yeah. Nice.
Yes, and he plays a hot dad.
God, they're all so attractive. Like,
I know. It's so ridiculous. I have a ridiculous crush on Jughead. He's such... I know, he's so cute. And obviously a crush on Veronica, because she's also so beautiful and so funny and just such a great show. I cannot say it enough.
I was, like, tweeting stupid shit while I was watching Riverdale, and the actor that plays Joaquin, like, responded to one of my tweets.
Shut up! Oh my god, I'm ragingly jealous right now.
That's awesome. I was like, oh, I'm watching Riverdale, Joaquin, hello. And then he, like, responded with hello, and I was like, fuck.
First of all, can we just say that that means that the actor, like, name searches his character? Himself, yeah. That's really funny. Yeah. And I love that. That's so cute. I hope. Yeah. We should slide into those DMs. No, I'm kidding. That's really good, though. But yeah, I only ended up watching half of last night's episode, so I have that left watch today. I'm very excited. And then I just finished reading two sort of quasi-junky mysteries. I finished Girl on the Train, finally, which took me forever to finish. And then I read A Dark, Dark Wood, which is sort of in the same vein. I'm kind of interested in, I haven't read much about this, like, trend of women-centered murder mystery, like, trashy novels coming out, but I love it. I'm totally, mm-hmm. totally into it. I really liked Girl on the Train. I haven't seen the movie.
The movie's good. I haven't read the book, but I've seen the movie.
Oh, I love the book, for sure. So I should I should watch the movie, because the book was really good. And A Dark, Dark Wood is another British British one about a group of people who go on, like, a bachelorette weekend up to a cabin, and terrible, scary things happen.
Oh, no.
And it was just picked up by Reese Witherspoon's production company to be made into a movie. Oh. So I'm looking forward to that being a movie. And then other than that, I have been obsessed with politics and, trying to, make sure everyone I love continues living their lives. I went to D.C. for the Women's March, and that was really awesome and totally worth doing. And I highly recommend, if anybody listening wants to talk about how they can contribute successfully to their local left-wing political party, please get in touch. that's the last thing I'll say about that.
Okay. All right, Riley, what have you been up to?
Well, last time we talked, I said I would finish my Overwatch placements, and I did, but I did them for season 3.
Oh.
So I haven't done that new season yet, even though it just started. And even though I lost 7 games and only won 3, I got a higher season ranking than last time. So I have no idea how the Overwatch ranking works, honestly, for placements.
I think those placements are kind of bullshit. Like, they don't really matter.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I gotta do the new season. And then maybe actually, like, play more than 10 games. Yeah. In competitive. And I haven't really played anything else. I downloaded Paragon on my PlayStation because they added a K-pop star as one of the heroes. So I'm going to play that today. So I'm really excited about that.
That's awesome.
And we went to, so HMV is, like, closing and, like, shutting all of their stores down. So we went to HMV and we actually saw Ghost in the Shell on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's the second version, so it's not the very first one that came out. It's based on that one.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Was Ghost in the Shell originally a comic book?
Manga,
or TV
show.
Or a movie?
No, I think it was a manga first.
Okay. Gotcha.
Although I'm sure somebody will come correct me.
Like, no, if I'm wrong. Actually. Well, actually.
I'm pretty sure it was a manga. But, I mean, I don't know if the version that I watched was the best one to watch, because it was kind of boring.
Oh.
There's, like, a lot of politics, like, more politics and talking than like, any of the action sequences and stuff. So, yeah, I'm not really sure. But when we took it up to the counter, the girl that was selling us the DVD, she was like, so what do you think about them casting Scarlett Johansson? And I was like, girl, don't get me started. I was like, and then the girl beside her was like had the same kind of sentiments. And she was like, it's bullshit. I was like, wow, I'm glad that you guys are on the same page as me. So that was interesting, seeing that kind of like those observations outside of just Twitter, which is where I see pretty much everything. That was kind of cool. And then, we just talked about Riverdale, so I've been watching that, and I really like it. Yeah, it gives off, like, a really different vibe, because I haven't watched Gossip Girl or Pretty Little Liars at all, so I don't have those to compare it to.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you just say you haven't watched Gossip Girl?
No.
I haven't.
Okay. What?
No,
I watched the first episode, and then I was like, nah.
Oh, no, okay.
I'm good now.
I need you both. I need you both.
We made her. We made Sarah watch Alien, so I guess we could
just
watch
just give it a few episodes and tell me you're not in love with Chuck Bass, and if you don't fall in love with Chuck Bass, who is legitimately the worst human being on the planet, then that's fine. You don't have to watch the rest. But
I mean, I can. I have some extra time. I can invest in watching something else. So.
It's so good, so good.
And then I've recently started watching like a couple different YouTube channels that do mukbangs, which is like, it's just like an eating show, basically. And one of them is a Vietnamese guy called Tin Le, and he cooks a lot of his own Vietnamese food, and then like eats it on the video. And the last one, one of the ones that I watched was where he made pho in front of, like, he had, like, the whole setup and the camera was, like, right in front of the big glass bowl that he cooked everything in. And he actually, like, talked about his family and how food, makes him feel, like, more comfortable, especially, like, traditional Vietnamese food, because he can, like, relate it back to his parents and stuff like that. So that was a really, really cool thing to see. So I'm, like, making my way through some of his videos.
Do you want to make pho sometime? It's really fun to make.
I've never had it, so.
Oh, we should do it. It's. I was so pleased to discover you can just buy pho bouillon, or you can boil bones in for many hours, which is way more fun. But we should do it. It's fun to make. It's delicious too.
Yeah, the only problem that I've been like finding is that I don't know exactly like what is gluten free in pho or not.
If we make it ourselves, we can make sure it's
sweet. Yeah, let's do it. Yep. And then the other channel I've been watching is another guy called, I don't know if it's his actual name, but his YouTube channel name is Ben Dean, and he lives in South Korea in Seoul, and he doesn't make a lot of things. He like buys like weird things and like orders in from different like Korean restaurants and stuff, and he like, you know, eats them and talks about a bunch of shit, and his videos are really good too.
Is this a new trend, this just videos of people eating food?
I think it's getting bigger. It's been a thing. Like mukbang is specifically a Korean thing, so it's getting bigger and like making its way over into like more Western YouTube channels. But it definitely started, I think it started in Korea. And then, I found K-pop podcast. it's two guys. One of them is a DJ, and the other one, I think, is like a student, and they live in the same area in California. And, the two that I've listened to, they did a big episode on BTS, which is the band that I listen to most. They did a big episode on their new stuff and like analyzed it from like a like professional perspective, which I don't find that you get a lot with a lot of K-pop fans. Like they just kind of, you know, whatever their bands put out, they love it immediately. But these guys were like going through like how they filmed the music videos and what the music sound was like. So I thought that was really cool. And their most recent one was on a newer girl band. And they did a really good episode because their music video kind of talks about, like, what your image is versus who you actually are, And so they were talking about how, like, that's a big thing with Korean idols because, like, their image is so manufactured by their companies that basically, like, all you see isn't exactly who they are. Mm-hmm. So that was, like, a really cool conversation. It was, like, a half-hour podcast, so it was really short. But, yeah, that's the K-pop cast by Peter and Matt, and I'll put their links in the show notes later. But, yeah, they were really good, really insightful commentary on some of the music, so that was really neat. And then I ordered a bunch of books to learn Korean, so I'm learning Korean slowly but surely.
Good job. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm excited. The alphabet was really, is so far pretty easy to learn. There's a couple letters and stuff that don't have a similar sound in English, so those are a little more difficult. But yeah, I'm really excited because I've been looking for something like something to do in my spare time where I'm like learning and like, I don't know, mm-hmm. just doing something other than sitting in front of my computer playing games. And, you know, so I picked this up and I'm enjoying it so far, and I have 3 units essentially to work my way through. So yeah, I'm like super stoked.
That's really cool. I've tried to learn languages before, and it never goes particularly well for me. So I wish you better luck than I have.
Thanks. Yeah, I sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, yeah, I want to help you learn Korean because that sounds fun, so you'll have to practice on us.
Sweet, yeah. I'll give you guys flashcards, and whenever I see you, you can just, yes. Yeah, I already know, like, conversational French, which is kind of slipping a little bit because I haven't really used it in years, but...
Oh, that's what we should do. We actually should speak French to each other because I could use the practice, too.
Yeah.
Next episode, we're doing it in French.
We could do that. It'll take a while, but we could. And that's kind of it for me. But yeah.
So I've been playing a few things lately. First of all, Torment Tides of Numenera just came out, which is the successor to Planescape Torment, which is my favorite game of all time. It's a very story-based CRPG, and I started playing that. I backed the Kickstarter a couple years ago, and I've put in a few hours so far, and it's really, really good. Like, it's a very, very story-based thing with all this, like, great world building, and everyone you talk to, like, has a real personality and has something different about them. So it's very dense. Like, there's a lot of reading to do, but I'm really enjoying it. Like, there's this one part you go and you talk to someone who's just, like, you know, just an NPC. And what they do is they study the reproduction habits of different species, and then they tell you about how their own species reproduces. And it's like parents or want to be parents have to, like, cut off a part of them in order to make a child. And then what part they choose determines the child's station in life. So if they cut off their arm, the child will be a laborer. And if they cut off their leg, they'll be a warrior. And if they do the ultimate sacrifice and cut off their head, the child will be a leader.
That is so wild.
It's really cool. And it's just like, that's just like one conversation with one of hundreds of NPCs, and like everything has that much detail and world building in it.
That's wild.
So I'm only, yeah, like 3 hours into it so far, so I'm looking forward to playing more. And then I played the Telltale Batman game, which was better than I thought it would be.
I feel like every time there's a Batman anything, it's like, let's go over his origin story 700,000 friggin' times.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Did that you know his parents were killed in an alley? Did you guys know that? Did you
I
know?
I didn't know.
Oh, okay. So
tell me again.
Were killed in an alley. Yeah.
Yeah. So this one, at first, it sort of gets mentioned in passing, and I foolishly was like, oh, that's cool that it was just mentioned like that. But no, then it was mentioned like 700 more times, and you had to go through it, and you had to show it. Although the game does sort of like go off canon, I guess, and it ends up, a minor spoiler alert, that Bruce's dad like wasn't the saint that everyone painted him to be. So his dad especially is like an actual important part of the story. It's not just like, hey, he was murdered and now Batman fights crime.
Yeah.
But there were some cool parts. There was this one really great fight where you play as Bruce and then Selina, who's Catwoman, and they're in a bar fight and you like fight with the both of them, like they're fighting other people, and that was pretty cool. And yeah, it was okay. I liked how they sort of went, you know, off the comics and off the movies, so they had a whole new villain that you didn't expect, so that was kind of cool. And then I also have been playing some VR games. I got the Arkham VR, which, again, starts off with you actually in the alley and having to watch the parents get shot in VR.
That doesn't seem like something that you want to see ever in VR.
I don't want to see that at all. So actually, because in that game, you can press a button to go to spin 180 degrees. So as soon as I saw it was going on, I just spun around and I like sat there with my back to it. But the VR is okay. I still think it's sort of just a novelty. Like I would much rather use it to just do things or go places that I wouldn't get to go normally, like under the ocean or in space or something. Like I don't really like it when there's a lot of gameplay in them. I'd rather just go and see cool stuff and sit there.
Yeah, see things that you probably wouldn't be able to see, like in real exactly. life environments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like go to space. That'd be, exactly. That'd be fucking cool.
Yeah, no, I haven't tried a space one yet.
We had I was telling Pam yesterday, we had I took a course called Futures Thinking, where we part of the courses you had to pitch a project that might, you know, like what ours was, what will be the future of transportation in Toronto, and another group did the future of the travel industry, and so they pitched this corporation that was VR travel, where you would like you know, just have all your future travel would be VR, and I was like, that actually sounds amazing. And I want to do that, where you can just sign up for experiences and do it in VR. I think that'd be super cool.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing would offer a lot to people that, like, physically can't go.
Yep. Yeah. Or, like, really can't afford an actual trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were saying, like, oh, you could have, you know, the sounds, obviously, and maybe you could take a pill so that it tastes like you're eating the food, and they would, like, pump in smells, stuff like that. So I was like, that would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to finding more sort of cool little VR experiences. There's this one game that I don't remember the name of it right now, but by the looks of it, you just like are an eagle and you fly around.
That's cool.
And then I haven't been watching a ton, but I started a rewatch of The Sopranos.
Yes.
Which I've seen that many times, but it's been a number of years since I last saw it, so I've gotten Will into it with me, so much so that he is now watching it without me. but yeah, it's cool going back to that and seeing how well it stands up. Like, everyone in there is just, like, racist and sexist as fuck, but it's still, like, such a good show. And yeah, so quotable.
It's, that show is, I actually find it very interesting, because I remember when it was airing and there was a Vanity Fair came out with a cover of Tony Soprano. I mean, it was James Gandolfini in character as Tony Soprano with, you know, an exotic dancer sitting on his lap facing away from the camera. Right. And there was like a whole big thing about it. And I was like, okay, but the show is about a sexist guy. Like that's what the show's about. It's not. And I guess the problem is like it glorifies it because he's kind of cool. But I feel like if you think Tony Soprano is a cool guy that you want to be like that's a
problem.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
No one should want to be like Tony Soprano.
Yeah. It's just like with Breaking Bad and like seeing all the people who thought Walt was the hero. And it's like, no, Walt is a bad, bad man.
Yeah.
But it's I'm enjoying watching through it again. I think we're near the end of season 3 now. So and I think that's about it for what I've been up to, so we can move on to our main topic, which is Alien, or the first two movies in the series. If you don't know, Alien is a movie which was from 1979, directed by Ridley Scott, about a mining ship, the Nostromo, who finds a distress signal and goes to investigate it, and then bad shit happens, basically. So, Sarah, this was your first time watching Alien and Aliens.
I've been shamed for so long having not watched it. I'm glad that you suggested it, because I really have always wanted to watch it. I just never got around to it. And it's really weird, being that I love horror movies. I'm a horror movie buff. I watch every crappy horror movie that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm super glad that I got to watch it, and I loved it, obviously. I thought it was really, really good. It was also cool to see, finally, like, how many shows and movies and stuff take inspiration from it. Obviously, it seems like an originator when it comes to things like space horror, Silence of Space, even just like what aliens and movies look like. It had such a big influence on things, so it was awesome to watch.
Yeah. Now, you brought up a sort of conversation topic, and we may as well start there, about how it is to, I guess, not have seen something that's considered mandatory viewing or in the sort of pop culture consciousness.
Yeah. What I was thinking about with that was mostly like, I don't know, maybe I'm getting a little too deep into this, but I think especially coming from, let's say, a white heterosexual perspective that I come from, mostly, whatever, you sort of assume that everyone has the same experience as you. And so I think you can have the same, which is bad. You should not assume that. And it's just goes to show the hegemony of culture and whatever that it's a privilege that I can assume that everyone's had the same experiences as me. And I think that that can be extrapolated onto pop culture as well, where, you know, everyone would assume that you've seen Alien. I think that's that people would make that assumption. And that I think we need to stop being mean to people who haven't seen things, even though I was just yelling at you guys for not having seen Gossip Girl. I think it's going to be my goal to try and not have that reaction. I think it's fine to be surprised if someone hasn't seen something, but maybe think to yourself, well, why do I assume everyone's had the same, you know, experiences that I've had? Like, I was thinking, like, you know, half of my background is Serbian, and my father's like, always like, oh, you haven't seen this Serbian movie? And I'm like, why would I have seen that? I don't know. Maybe I should have the same sort of, you know.
Yeah. And it's interesting to think about that, because it's also a product of time. Like, if you met a 20-year-old, would you assume that they had seen Alien? I mean, even the three of us, none of us were born when the first Alien came out. But it's still like, oh, you haven't seen Alien? That's so shocking.
Yeah, it's weird to think that something could be so popular that you assume anyone of any age forever has seen it for all time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
And actually, when you brought that up, it made me draw the connection with all the Batman media I've been consuming. And the thing like, okay, we know his parents have been murdered, but like, when's the point to stop showing that? Or do you assume everyone knows or not? It's sort of a tough one, because I totally see your point about not expecting people to have seen everything just because you've seen it.
Yeah.
But then there is also that, like, okay, we know, stop telling us to certain properties.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. And it's also, the other thing I was thinking about that was, I don't really like old movies, like, from the 50s. I know. So, like, we had to watch a movie, which actually I'm going to bring up later, for class, starring Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy, and I was like, this is the first Katharine Hepburn movie I've ever seen. Everyone was like, what the hell is wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't like this. I think it's really bad. Like, I just don't like this genre. I don't like oldie-timey romance. I just don't. It doesn't do it for me, so I just never, ever watch them, ever. But the flip side is, I'm glad I have now seen Alien, but I don't think I was missing out on anything that people assumed I was missing out on, not having seen it. Like, I still understood it. I understood the references in everything else I've ever seen that referenced Alien, even without having seen the movie. So it wasn't that huge a loss, for sure.
All right, so where do we begin to talk about this?
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Why did you want to talk about this on the show?
I just think it's it's such an interesting movie. According to the director, he was just like, oh, I just went out to make a scary movie. But there's so many different readings and interpretations of it. Like, there's feminist readings, and there's Marxist readings, and there's Freudian readings. Like, there's so much sort of symbolism in the movie, even if it wasn't intentional, which I have a hard time believing it wasn't at least somewhat intentional. But yeah, there's just like so many things to draw from it. So I just thought it would be a good topic.
I totally agree. And I will tell you, and I thought it was because I've been spending so much time around DSA people lately and all these Marxists on my Twitter feed. but for the entire part, we're going to spoil stuff, right? Because this is a super
movie. Yeah.
For the entire time Parker and Brett were alive, I was like, this movie is about workers' rights. This is a movie about fair pay for non-officers in like military corporate situations. That's all I could think of, was like, these two guys who are, you know, the hard workers on the ship, and they're not in any position of power, are the ones who are going to die first. And that's like the symbol of, you know, how this corporation can, you know, grinds you to a pulp or whatever. So yeah, totally. I'm so glad that's an actual popular point of view on this film, because I totally got that from moment one.
Yeah, I think the corporation bit definitely is more explicit in the second movie, but it's definitely there in the first movie.
In the second movie, actually, I noticed this, but that the corporation in the second movie is represented by a Jewish actor, which I was like, is he trying to say something here? Is this like, why would you pick Paul Reiser for this role? I don't know. So, but that's probably reading a bit much into it, but I thought that was very interesting on the second one for sure.
Mm-hmm. So going back to, I guess, the first movie, what do you think makes it such an effective horror movie that has become such a pop culture landmark?
For me, the effective use of silence and the lack of dialogue. There's really very little said in that movie. And it's, I think they did that really, really well. And it wasn't even like vast expanses of space silence. It was just sort of the silence of functioning every day on a spaceship that I found quite effective. It scared the fuck out of me, for sure.
I liked that. We like the shots in the movie of like where people would die, like you don't especially when the facehugger latches onto the first guy, you don't see that, you just see them like carrying him back onto the ship, like you don't see how they reacted to it, you don't see like the panic of getting him out of there with that thing on his face. And then like when the other characters die, like you don't really see like the whole alien until like the very end almost. So, you know, having this like mysterious thing like going through the air ducts in their ship where like they don't even know exactly what it looks like. I really like that. Like one of the best things, and I know Sarah, you've definitely talked about this before, where like you don't see the monster.
Don't show the monster. Yeah, number one rule.
That is the most scary thing, is to not see whatever is like hunting these people. So I really liked all the different shots, especially like seeing like the calm and the silence in other parts of the ship where you know that there's other shit happening. I really like that.
That's a good, really good observation. I actually hadn't thought about that.
Thanks.
No, it's funny because maybe I was a little tainted by seeing a lot of stuff about this movie for so many years before actually having seen it, because I knew what the alien looked like, right?
Right.
I mean, everybody knows what a xenomorph looks like. So it's maybe it would have been even more effective for me if I didn't know that. But yeah, they did a good job of hiding the monster. That's very, very true. Even though the monster, like, it's so beautiful. The Geiger's art is, like, so incredible.
Yeah.
But they did a really effective job at hiding it, for sure. Oh, you're so smart. That was good. Good call.
In addition to the sort of silence and what they decide to show or not, I thought it was interesting, like, how or when they show violence. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. the chestburster was very graphic and disturbing. But for the most part, the deaths in that weren't, like, they weren't gory. They weren't graphic. I mean, the only other one that was like that was really the android. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah. he doesn't have any. He's milk for blood. But, but I did think that was interesting how, you know, all the other people who die on the ship, you don't see. Like, Dallas, you don't see him at all, like, yeah. what happens to him.
True.
And even the other people, like, maybe you can see some blood, you can see that they're being hurt in some way, but there's no no overt, you know, goriness.
Oh, we should clarify that we watched the theatrical cut.
Yes,
right.
Not the director's cut. Although I learned that we should have watched the director's cut of the second one.
There's, oh, really?
Yes. But maybe we'll do that another time. There's, yeah, we'll get there when we get there. yeah, no, you're right. I was thinking of the when Brett dies. It's just sort of a puncture wound, like he's punctured in that room with all the chains. He's mm-hmm. punctured through the heart, and then you don't see anything after that.
Yeah,
yeah.
To me, the not gory, but like the most scary part of the violence was when Ash was trying to shove the magazine down her throat.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Which is like really fucked up and phallic and weird and like,
yeah, I think it was like it was a porno magazine too.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. It was
beside totally all the pictures of like the naked women naked and stuff women, on the yeah. wall. Yeah,
that was like that part really grossed me out, and it wasn't really that gory, so yeah. Good point.
Yeah, that part was interesting because throughout the movie you hadn't really seen like a whole lot of gender
personality
like gender differentiation, like it didn't seem like, you know, there was much of a difference, so it's very strange that Ash would sort of malfunction in that way.
Yeah,
like who programmed him like that?
Yeah. Or like the only other time I did notice like there was a gender differentiation point was when I had to roll my eyes because, of course, the token black actor had to say these lines very early in the movie where he's like, I'd rather be eating something else, which, you know, you have to, like, sexualize the black character because that's just what, you know, shitty writers do. That made me roll my eyes really hard. So, like, that and then the murderous, like, sex-obsessed robot are the only two really points of sexualization in the film, which I found very, very strange.
Mm-hmm.
I assume the former was just really, or the writers not really, you know, thinking through why maybe it's not good to do that, but the latter, I assume, was on purpose. Maybe to, as a hint of, like, the level of evilness of the android. Is that possible that if you're someone who looks at porno that you're a bad person, or so in order to double down on the fact that this was a villainous robot, they mm-hmm. did that? But yeah, who programmed him? Right. That's a very good point. Yeah.
So we have a question from Yumi Yu, who is also known as Yusuf, who was on a couple episodes ago. He says, Ripley was originally supposed to be played by a man. How do you think that would have changed both films' themes? Like, I'm having a hard time seeing
Ripley as a man? That role being a man? Like,
I mean, I think it would have been less compelling if Ripley was a man, but there had to have been some, you know, script changes in there, like the part with the magazine. I can't see that happening.
Yeah.
Ripley was a man.
I don't know. I wouldn't have had the same feelings of representation in a film if I'd been watching a movie that didn't have a female lead. But I don't know how much that would have affected my enjoyment of the film.
I think it would have really changed how you see Ripley in the second film.
Yeah, for sure.
Because the entire time she's like babysitting this young girl, pretty much.
Okay, so can I say a quick thing about the director's cut of the second one? Okay, so I was told that the reason that she has the kid in, with her in the second movie is because of a deleted scene that we didn't see where she's informed that her actual daughter died of cancer while she was asleep for 57 years.
Oh!
Yeah! Right, so I was like, that makes so much more sense that she, like, has this affinity for this, you know, girl child and... So,
wow,
yeah.
That adds a lot of context.
I was like, that changes the entire movie.
Jeez.
I was like, why is this child prop here? Like, this is so dumb. But then when I think to myself, and apparently there's like some flippant remark that Burke makes where he's like, hi, yeah, we haven't cured all of those yet. Sorry. It's, yeah, I was like, oh, okay. Well, now I hate that part less. Like, I was really upset that they had saddled her with this child for the movie. But then after hearing that, I was like, okay, that makes slightly more sense.
Yeah. Having that the little girl around is definitely, like, I don't know, like, it bothered me a lot on rewatch even. Like,
yeah.
Adding that context, it makes a little more sense.
But
not every woman, like, I've seen this being talked about a lot, especially in relation to, like, Overwatch lately. Where not every character needs to be a mother to be, like, relatable or...
humanized.
Yeah. Like, you know, Ripley is, like, she's so badass. And she, like, basically, like, takes down these things on her own. And she always has, like, she's got the best ideas. She's the one who, like, warned them from letting in the very first one in the first place to add in this... like, the child to kind of, like, humanize her or make her a little more relatable. I thought it was complete bullshit.
Yep.
But I guess, like, you know, that she would definitely have... like, she definitely has some PTSD. And then, you know, finding out that your daughter died of cancer while you were asleep in hyperspace, like, that would definitely fuck you up. So, I don't know. I guess, like, there's definitely more than one way to look at it, for sure, now that I've heard that.
Yep.
But, yeah.
I have a hard time, like, I feel like if Ripley was a man, that wouldn't have been part of the second movie.
Right,
I don't think the kid would have been there. Also, something you brought up, Sarah, when we were watching yesterday, it does then have that dynamic of near the end of the movie where she finds the sort of the queen alien, and then it's like two mothers protecting their babies. There. So, I mean, I think that's definitely an important part of Ripley. And then I think her being a woman becomes more important even in the third, going into the third movie. Whereas in the first movie, I don't know, I think you can tell more that it was not a role that was meant for a particular sex. I think there was probably scenes added. Like the underwear scene at the end, which I actually really like. Other than the fact that her underwear didn't fit, I liked that. I liked how she, I'm safe now. I can, you know, I can
strip underwear, down and get into my sleep.
Yeah, bag. Like, underwear is like, when you're at your most vulnerable is like a huge horror film trope. So, I mean, but I love it.
I mean, I loved just even the scene of her sort of slowly stepping into the spacesuit, and I really liked that.
Also, not to be objectifying or anything, but Sigourney Weaver is extremely hot. So if they were going for the eye candy thing with those parts, it worked on me. So.
Nailed it.
I was gonna say also, if you think about the, like, broodmother versus Sigourney Weaver as a mother, Ripley mother scene, if that character had been male, it would have just been, a man killing a mother who was protecting her children. Maybe, I don't know, that connotation would probably be a little different.
Do you think that if a man was in the role, would they have changed the little girl's role to be like maybe his wife died? And so it's like an older, an older young woman instead of like a kid. And then he would have been like running around like protecting her, like a civilian woman instead of a kid.
That's possible.
I'm also trying to think of why I find it unbelievable that the girl would still be there if it was a male Ripley, considering video games, that's like, that's what video games are all about. Just men protecting their daughters or daughter.
Yeah, standards. Very Last of Us feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think it definitely would have changed, like, how, like, because Ripley, like, I connect Ripley and, like, Commander Shepard in video games a lot, like, as two, like, main, like, protagonists of series that are happening. So, like, without Ripley, would Commander Shepard have been as strong, you know? I don't know.
Hmm.
As strong of an icon, I guess.
I think I'm also maybe just biased a little bit because I really hate child actors in horror movies. I don't.
Yeah.
I'd really prefer not to have any children whatsoever. I think it's kind of it's a cheap plot point to just say, like, okay, the stakes are high now because this person's young. I think the stakes would have been high without, you know, without the kid. That would have been just fine.
I have a question for you then. Have you seen Stranger Things?
Yes. Okay. But when we, of course, the last time I was on the show, Stranger Things. if you'll refer back to that earlier episode of Media Mavens, you'll see that I said this is the only time hate the children. I know that was what was one of the such perfect things about that show is they actually cast children that I didn't hate.
Yeah.
And I was totally into it, and they acted like little adults, and it was fantastic. Yeah, no, I love.
Doy. So listen to that one, then listen to this one.
I agree.
God, that's embarrassing. Sorry about that.
No, that was cute.
Was there anything else in the first film that really sort of stood out?
I think while we were watching it, when they're coming back to the ship, and Ripley is like, there's quarantine procedures happening.
Okay, yes, I was going to talk about bioethics.
Yeah. And then Ash just overrides the door. And, like, immediately you're kind of like, okay, well, something is going on. But also, like, this dude is, like, overriding, like, you know, the woman making the call, basically, even though she's technically, like, in command because the people are off the ship. So, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and it was actually so beautiful to me. There were a couple instances of, and I'm now forgetting the other instance, where she was strictly adhering to, like, ethics of bioethical functioning in terms of the medicine that was going on there and quarantine and stuff, and I was like, this movie's about bioethics! That's what this movie's about! I was so proud of her, because mostly I find in movies they don't give a shit about any of that stuff. And, you know, like, I don't know if you ever watched House, I fucking hate that show, because he just does whatever he wants, he doesn't give a shit about ethics, and it's all just like, don't follow the rules, I'm a hero, but being ethical makes you a hero in my book, so I was very proud of her for that, and super annoyed at the dude for just doing whatever he wanted.
Stupid Ash.
It had been a long time since I had seen Alien, and it just struck me how well everything was done. Like, seeing you particularly react to it as a first-time viewer, and every decision that Ash made, and every look on his face, and how you're analyzing.
Oh, yeah.
You're
like, yeah, what the fuck listening is wrong to with you, like, yeah. like, work it out, I was like, well, she knows.
I was like, he's too calm. Why is he so calm? I don't like this. Like, why isn't he freaking out? And then it's because he's a robot. But I was really shocked by that. Actually, you know what? That's one amazing. It was done so well in that movie. It was the reveal that he was an android, because I was just like, get the fuck out of here. He's a robot? What the hell?
So yeah, you were like, he's sweating milk. What the fuck?
Yeah, so I was very, very impressed by that. Super a lot.
Yeah.
The other thing I did want to talk about was something in information profession related, which is the feminization of the computer in that movie. The movie I was going to talk about with Katharine Hepburn is called Desk Set, and I don't know if either of you have seen Desk Set. It's not one of her more popular movies. So this is, I promise this story has a point at some point. So in this movie, she and three other women are the reference library at a newspaper. And they're all extremely smart, and they know the answer to every question. People just randomly call in with questions, and they answer them off the top of their head. They, like, barely need to look at a book. And this movie was a early 50s movie. So Spencer Tracy comes in, and it's not really clear what his role is, but he's told them that they're going to be replaced by what they call a mechanical brain, which is obviously a computer. And they're all very worried, and there's all these machinations about her falling in love with him and yada, 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 even though he's trying to replace her. And that basically all the upper crust in the news organization think that all these women are replaceable by a computer. So it turns out, obviously, that the computer only does as well as the inputs. It's not as, you know, it doesn't know the pros of, like, Hamlet, you know, like Katharine Hepburn's character does or whatever. But the computer in that is given a woman's name. It's like Molly or something, and it is treated like it has a period. It sort of has, you know, hysterics sometimes. When you get in the, you know, it like gets it smokes and when it's upset and yada yada yada. So, I thought that it was very interesting that this movie also feminized the computer. It was called Mother. Mm-hmm. In fact, Ripley calls her a bitch at some point. Yeah. And it just, I'm learning a lot about this in one of my classes right now, about how, you know, I don't know if either of you have seen Hidden Figures, but basically that before computers, you know, reference and filing and all those small jobs like that was women's work. You know, women were telephone operators and reference librarians and, you know, file organizers and all this stuff that was sort of, those were really women's jobs. And then, you know, along come computers, and a lot of women's history with computers has been erased, and people don't know that women are very involved in the invention of computer learning and computer, you know, functioning and stuff. And so this movie to me was just like the instantiation of this, like, this is, let us blame this female computer for, you know, all these glitches or whatever. And it was, I'm going to recommend, if anybody wants to read more about this, there's an article called When Computers Were Women by Jennifer S. Light that I highly recommend if you want to learn about sort of the beginning of when computers were being popularized. Highly recommend it if anybody wants to read more about it and think about the computer in Alien. And also, any 70s movie that has computers in it, you know, HAL from 2001, mm-hmm. Death Set, another, I really highly recommend watching Death Set, although it is the most sexist movie I've ever seen in my entire life. Honestly, Spencer Tracy comes in and he's like, I'm going to take your job. And she's like, tee-hee, oh you, and then they fall in love. And I'm like, okay. But anyways, the computer, the feminization of the computer in this movie struck, like, wow, it was glaring. And then the only time anyone ever says bitch again is when she calls the brood mother a bitch. Mm-hmm. So those are,
yeah,
yep,
that's true.
Yeah,
I didn't think about that. I guess there aren't really any like other slurs like that.
Yep.
Yeah, the computer was strange because, I mean, obviously calling it mother is a pretty loaded term, and there's all kinds of imagery around motherhood in a way, and birth and pregnancy and things like that, but I like mother wasn't really a character like a lot of AI
you know, when someone's putting in inputs of how to deal with the alien, and she's just like, I don't have the answers. And at least that's good, because this does show the truth of, you know, a computer's only programmed to do what you tell it to do. And in this case, it was told to fuck everything up and, like, be a jerk. So that part was good. But, yeah, the feminization of computers in, like, early science fiction is just so fascinating. So fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Well, even now, most of the computer voices you get are
Yep.
Female sounding.
Yeah.
Like Siri, well, and the Amazon one. I don't
Cortana.
Alexa.
Oh, Cortana. Yeah.
Yeah. And Alexa.
Yeah.
Mm.
Did you guys see Her? Did you ever?
No.
I haven't seen that one.
Do not watch that movie. It was pretty agonizing for, you know, this, just to have the computer be Scarlett Johansson. Like, that's... Anyways.
All right. So, anything else to say about Alien before we move a little on to Aliens?
I loved it. That's why I'm just going to repeat that I love them, the movie, and I'm really glad that you showed it to me.
Good. I'm always so excited to show things to people for the first time. I don't get to do that enough because Will doesn't like to watch things. Okay, we had another question from Runny Cat, who asks, true or false, Jonesy is the real hero?
Jonesy, every time that cat was on screen, I was scared that he was going to bite it. So obviously I cared a lot about that cat.
You were either scared it was going to die, or you were yelling at Ripley to leave it behind.
Yes. Yeah. Don't tell Runny that. I'm sorry, Runny. True. I would have, yes, Jonesy, real hero. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I liked when we were watching it and you pointed out, like, the similarities to, like, actual sailing.
Oh, yeah.
How, like, they would have a cat on an actual boat for mice, and then they've got a cat on, like, this, like, space boat, essentially. Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
And they definitely, and you pointed out when they jettisoned the body, and I was like,
yeah.
So the sailing parallels, actually, I'm not sure why there were so many sailing parallels without really any, they didn't really have an effect on the story, but.
I think that just comes from, like, space in general, like, space, like, sci-fi stuff. Like, there's, you know, the ships are, like, she and they, you know, they've got, like, a captain and a helmsman. And, like, the easiest way to equate something that we don't know a lot about is to relate it to something that we have here on Earth, and that would be sailing, so.
Yep. Good call.
I liked Jonesy. And I can see the point, like, aside from the sailing similarities, it was just, you know, thinking about being in space for a certain amount of time, the emptiness, the silence, and, you know, pets are often very stress relieving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another, like, one of the things I like too about Alien is, like, it's like a normal thing, like where you have, like, a mining vessel or, like, a drill rig or something in the middle of the ocean. Like, it's like a relatable kind of thing. And the ship looked like it was lived in. And even though it's, like, supposed to be, you know, futuristic and whatever, it still looked like, you know, like it had been lived in and worked in, and
more plausible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I keep thinking of things I want to say. The only other really significant thing that I noticed in Alien that not shocked me, but to me, I noticed this so hard, is the smoking. You know, everyone's smoking weed. I don't know if people know about this, but there was a big push, you know, by health boards and whatever to eliminate smoking in movies because they think, you know, it makes kids smoke or whatever. And so you're really hard pressed to find a cigarette in a movie these days. It's so super, super rare. So when I see it on screen in old movies, I'm just like, holy crap, that is wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is so strange to see it, because I guess, it's really not present at all anymore. Like, maybe the bad guy smokes, but
yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, to see everyone smoking, and, like, just even thinking about it, like, smoking in this contained space.
Yeah. I mean, where's the smoke going to go? Like,
I don't know. That was very silly, but also funny.
So after Alien ends, Aliens picks up, as far as Ripley is concerned, it picks up immediately, even though in the rest of the world, 57 years had gone by.
Mm-hmm.
And a weird thing happens, which is that the genre of the movie changes. Whereas Alien was a pretty straight horror movie, Aliens becomes much more of, like, a Colonial Marines action movie. Which is interesting, and I can't think of any other series that really does that.
Okay, so I Googled that when I got home.
Okay.
I was, like, really thinking of it, too. So people suggest that Rocky, the Rocky movies changed a lot from the first one, which this list that I saw called the first one an indie drama, which I will maybe give it that, but those turned into much more action movies. For me, the one that wasn't on any list that I saw that I think the genre changed a lot was the Rambo movies. I thought the first Rambo movie was like an anti-war thriller, and the rest were dumb action movies, like really dumb. but the first one was not, I only watched it recently, and the first Rambo movie was not what I thought it was going to be at all. It was really, really effective and, like, I don't know, emotional. But yeah, totally different to me than the rest of them. But yeah, this was, I don't think I've ever seen any horror series change the genre that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure.
And I was thinking part of it was just because, you know, what we were talking about earlier, where you don't show the monster and we don't really get a good look at it. But then going into two, everyone knows what the xenomorph looks like. Like, there is still some mystery because they deduce that something is laying the eggs that they haven't seen yet. Mm-hmm. But I think just because we know what to expect, they sort of have to go at it from a different angle.
Did they ever go over how they knew what it looked like? Like, because I know they were like, oh, it's a bug stomping mission or whatever, but like, where would they have seen that? I don't know if that was ever.
I don't know if it's just from Ripley's description or, but yeah, that was another thing I thought of in the first movie. It seems like coming across alien species is something they're used to. And it seems like that in the second one as well. So it's not really ever built up, other than the xenomorphs, like what other things they're encountering as they go through space. But
I think it was insinuated that the xenomorphs are better than every other alien because they do that thing where they change their skin or whatever. I can't remember exactly what Ash said in the first movie, but he seemed surprised, and he was, you know, oh, this is, it's like a perfect organism, or whatever. So maybe they're used to sort of regular aliens that they go kill to clear for colonies.
Yeah.
But this is like super extra special shiny aliens. or what have you.
I keep saying that. Another thing that struck me about this was that how many story beats are basically just directly copied from the first movie. Like the corporation sort of lying and being like, oh yeah, you know, we're sending you to kill them. And it's like, nope, just kidding. We want to use them for weapons research. And then finding, I mean, there's even some parallels between Newt and Jonesy.
Yeah.
In terms of Ripley finding something to save. I mean, even the end is the same, with the alien sneaking on the ship and then having to have a final confrontation and getting blown out of the airlock.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't mind that for some reason. I think that story is compelling enough that I was like, yeah, that's okay. I was still, remember when we were watching the end and I was like, no, your leg, like, oh my god, the airlock's gonna close on you. So I guess I was still, you know, invested, even though I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just like an effective formula.
Yeah, I guess so.
But you don't like it. You don't like that there's repetitive story bits, huh?
I don't know. I just feel like it did feel repetitive, like watching them back to back. I mean, I can understand sort of the main, you know, themes and things being repeated, but just like, I don't know, Ripley gets fooled by the corporation, whereas I feel like she would have been a little bit smarter than that.
Yeah.
And then that final scene, which I just thought was awesome. Like, I love her in that loader bot outfit. But yeah, just like the fact that it's done like in the exact same way almost.
Yeah. Maybe they were, so I'm trying to think of, put myself in the shoes of a movie producer, like, listen, don't worry about the plot points. The first one worked great. Just just pump it up, you know? That's all I can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's like, you know, even though they knew going in that they might encounter some xenomorphs or whatever, that, like, no matter what you do, they'll still do the same kind of thing, and nothing that you can do will stop them from behaving that way. And, like, you know, even if you think you're safe, there will always be one around, like, in the ship with you.
Yeah. Ugh. I just I didn't get the willies. That one when it was, when it's on Ripley's ship at the end or whatever, and it's, like, curled up and sleeping.
Oh,
and
yeah,
the,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, God, like, it really freaked me out. Like,
and the hands are so gross, too.
And the like, sheen of the head.
Just... Yeah. And all the mouths and... Yeah.
So many mouths.
The weird, yeah. Like, zippy mouth.
Yeah, I love how it's designed to be, like, hit on so many different terrifying things, which, yes, is another thing that you were mentioning yesterday, Sarah. It's like crackly and smushy and scuttly and, yeah, like all at the same, yes, time.
And then it grows up into spiky and hurty and teethy and drippy. Mm-hmm. it does hit on a lot of things that people are scared of.
Yeah. So we had another question from the Doc Web, which was, what Earth species as host do you think would result in the most terrifying xenomorph?
Wait a minute, there can be different kinds of xenomorphs based on different hosts?
Well, we've only seen human hosts, right?
That's true. I guess in 3, there is a dog as a host, and then
no!
It becomes,
wait, no!
becomes at like a quadruped.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so scary. I don't want
and
that.
And then in Alien versus Predator, a Predator.
Oh, I forgot about
does
that.
One, and then the alien looks like Predator. So they do take on some of the forms of the host. So I assume that the...
Interesting.
The one at the end of Aliens is like the most like their species. Like, maybe? I don't even know if they have just like a true form or...
Gotcha. Interesting. Okay, who would be what would be the most scary xenomorph? A fascist? Sorry, I have a one-track mind.
Maybe, like, some kind of, like, a lizard or a...
Oh, yeah, no!
if that would even work, I don't
know.
Or
a crustacean?
Oh, yeah. Or, like, a spider-type one with, like, so many legs and, like...
No.
Yeah, the hard exterior shell of like a crab would be really scary.
And
like
pinchers?
Big old claws.
Yeah. No. No thanks.
Yeah, everything that I was thinking of was like sea creatures. Like I was thinking of squid, like giant squid, just all tentacles everywhere.
Oh,
that would be scary.
No. I do not want that. I don't want that. Yeah, the deep sea terrifies me, so that's for sure my I'm actually sitting here shivering.
Yeah, I really don't like you know, Mariana's Trench shit.
Yeah, bullshit.
No, thank you.
what if it was in the host of one of those anglerfish that makes its own light? And then, like, all you see in the depths of the ship is just, like, a little bit of glow from the xenomorph's, like, light.
Oh, that'd
thing.
Be so scary.
No, thank you. Okay, that's the end of that.
That one wins, I think.
Anglerfish? Fuck that.
Or something that can fly.
No, why did you say that? No, I don't want it. I don't want it.
Yeah, something that can like fly, or like even like a bat, maybe. Like it's got echolocation, so it doesn't need to like be able to hear you, so it doesn't even matter if you're quiet, it can still find you. Giving myself the creeps.
I know, this is bad.
Okay, so going back more to the actual events of Aliens, the characters in this movie were I guess partially they were more fleshed out. We got to know them a little bit more. I personally got much more attached to any characters in this movie than I did in the first one. But mostly because they were very over the top. What'd you think about the characters in Aliens?
Having them be unknown actors to me made it a little, other than Bill Paxton, was a little less exciting, because I loved the actors, like Tom Skerritt and the guy from Big Love and all those actors. And the first one were really, I love seeing them young. I thought that was really great.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I guess I like Bill Paxton's character a lot. I love Paul Reiser, even though he was the big bad in this movie. But the other characters I found were just such stereotypes that it was really hard to actually care about them. Like, you guys had told me that this Latina character was actually not a Latina actress.
Yeah.
Which really made the character hard to stomach, and it was, like, the most stereotypical bullshit, like, Latina lesbian character I've ever seen in my life. So that, right off the bat, I was just like, is this a joke? Like, are you serious? And then again, they did it again in this movie where the only talk about sex was the black character, the only sole black character in the movie when they're sitting down to eat. And he's like, how about that, you know, whatever the alien race was called, Argantian Poontang or whatever. And oh. I was like, are you, we're doing this again? Like, Jesus Christ. So I was, that made me annoyed, and so I kind of was like, I can't like these characters just because I don't like the writers who made them. But, but Bill Paxton, for sure, his character was super, like, obviously very lovable.
Yeah, yeah, he gets like the iconic lines that people say, like, in you know, random like nerd conversations.
Yeah, I guess when you put it that way, the characters were more realistic in the first one, but at the same time,
less exciting.
Exciting. Like, I was like, okay, you're all gonna die. like in Aliens, it's more obvious. Like, it's more clear emotional manipulation as opposed to just good character development.
Mm. Yeah,
but I am susceptible to that, clearly.
No, and that's totally fine, and I just think it's a different sort of tone of film. Like, I thought the first one was a serious movie with serious actors, because I consider all those people to be serious actors, whereas in the second one, I thought there were more throwaway characters and actors.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's just my, you know, me being a snob about action movies. Who knows?
I liked... I don't know if I liked, like, the Marines, like, their personality, but I liked their, like, the armor that they were wearing and how they all had, like, their own customized stuff on it. Like, is it Hicks that had, the heart and the lock on his? Like, I really liked that. And then, there was a bullet hole on his, and around it, it said, like, born again. So, obviously, he was shot and almost died.
Mm-hmm.
Another one had a woman's name in the heart. At the front of his his chest.
Yeah, and there was like a skull of crossbones.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, I like their the detail on the armor.
Actually, that would be a really good group costume for Halloween if we went with the Marines from Aliens.
Yeah. I really liked all the detail in that. I didn't even notice that until you pointed it out. I don't generally notice that things, but once I started paying attention, I was like, oh, you can probably tell a lot about these characters by these decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the characters being, like, loud and, more extreme, like, probably comes from the genre change. Like, going from a, you know, like, a horror movie to, like, clearly an action, action shooting sequel. Definitely, like, the whole tone changed, and the actors were, like, they were bigger and louder and, like, more in your face about, like, what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think in the first one, obviously, Ridley Scott was really influenced by 2001: A Space Odyssey, which had come out the decade before, like exactly a year before, or sorry, 10 years before, because the outfits were really similar, you know, like sort of just the basic like crew khaki jumpsuit thing, and the sort of like the subtlety of the like the ranks weren't as obvious, and the sort of roles were sort of all similar, which I think was definitely a throwback to 2001. Whereas maybe in, I think between 1968 and 86, those like military action movies probably became a lot more popular.
Yeah.
So it was sort of more in keeping with what was popular at the time versus what was, like, yeah. That's probably, I hadn't thought of that. I think that's probably a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the second film was also directed by James Cameron,
right,
instead of Ridley Scott.
Man, what sequel has, like, had such a big director? So crazy to think about.
Mm-hmm. And it's also interesting to think about how much his movies have changed in that way. Like, I don't think there's anything like Aliens that he's done.
I'm trying to think. Did he do... he did Avatar, right?
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Avatar was a little like Aliens. Not as dark, yeah, obviously, but it still had the, like, corporation...
Big military.
Military, yeah, installation thing going on.
Yeah.
Even though it was awful.
All for resources. What? I love Avatar.
No, what? Oh my gosh. Oh, I thought that was so bad. I just, there's no accounting for taste.
We can like different things. God.
No, we can. Like, it's, we're allowed to like different things. It's true.
I guess. I haven't seen Avatar, so.
Oh!
I don't know which one of you is right.
Oh, you should watch it.
Well, you gotta watch it, and then we can talk about it. I just thought it was way too ham-fisted. Like, it was so,
I mean,
the movie was,
well,
so,
yeah,
obvious. But yeah, it was very beautiful.
Well, yeah, I think, like, what I really like about it is, like, how it looks. Plus, like, the experience of having it be, like, the very first 3D, like, IMAX,
yeah,
movie played a big part in it. Plus, like, the... I don't even remember what the alien people are called. But I, like...
Navi.
Yeah. Like, that's really cool. But, like, yeah, obviously, like, the colonialization message and, like, environmental fuck-up message, like, it's huge. Plus, like, I'm sure there's a lot to be said about, like, appropriation and... Fuck, we could do an episode on that.
Yeah, you should... See, when I watched it, I was like, oh, this movie is racist. But if,
yeah,
you're saying that the message was... Don't be like these white people.
Oh, I'm.
But I don't know.
That's how
I just...
I saw it. But I'm sure that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's other ways to read it.
So speaking of ham-fisted, which I think someone said, all the sort of evil corporation messages were much more explicit in Aliens than Alien. Like, obviously, we got the idea in the first movie that the corporation was just about money, which isn't surprising. But in Aliens, we have that message is sort of drove home repeatedly.
Yep.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting was, okay, so obviously when you sort of put a sci-fi movie out and you only show like a snippet of the universe, people are going to have tons and tons of questions. I thought it was super interesting that they made it seem like the corporation was the government. At least a little bit to me, where she stayed on the corporation's ship after she was rescued and I felt like she didn't really have anywhere else to go. She just got a job there and that was it. That's like your only option. So the corporation can be evil, but they made it, at least to me, it felt like it's the only option. Like, this is the reality now. And the fact that they didn't really address this, like, dystopian capitalist reality that they're living in made me really want to know more about it, for sure. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. It didn't seem like there was much else
going
out
on
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seemed like, yeah, everyone would just say, oh, the company, like, that was the answer to everything.
Yep. And the company also somehow seemed related to the military in some way, since, you know, he brought that Marine with him to go interview her in that first scene where they make the coffee in those fucking totally kick-ass coffee mugs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of like the military was there to protect the corporation's interests, in a way.
Mm.
So.
Like, privatized military.
But they didn't have any... It didn't look like there was any private logos on his uniform.
No.
Yeah. So it was just some sort of mixture of, like, yeah, those two things. It was very interesting.
Yeah, and I remember there was one part where Hicks, I think, said to Paul Reiser's character, he's like, this is a military operation. You're not in charge.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's hard to tell what exactly the relationship is there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Yeah. I had so many questions about that poor lieutenant. So, and then, so the point is that, I mean, I assume that the corporation installed him in that unit so that it would fail. So that they would...
I think, have, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were asking him about, like, how many combat missions he'd done.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, 38 simulated.
Yeah.
Two, including this one in real life. So, yeah, I think you're right. Where, like, they put an inexperienced guy in. So then they could kind of, like, blame it on that, maybe?
Did he ever wake up, that lieutenant, at the end?
No,
I don't think he did.
Didn't he blow up the lieutenant guy? Like, he was in the duct.
I thought he got blacked out.
No.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he blew himself up with Vasquez.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
okay. So he gotcha. Blacked out. He got hit in the head. Oh, and then
right, that's right. He did the good thing at the end.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And then he and Vasquez redeemed themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
By doing like the most badass death in the whole film.
Yeah. That was pretty badass.
And then Hicks was still fucked up, but he got put into cryo sleep or whatever.
Yeah. Him. Ripley, Newt, and then half of Bishop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we didn't talk about effects. We're going to talk about special effects.
Yeah, yeah.
Because last time I was on Media Mavens, please consult your episode guide. I didn't know the difference between CGI and, like, actual effects.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you guys had to explain to me that sometimes it's just somebody in a suit, and other times it's a computer.
It's a computer,
yeah. It's a computer. So, yeah, I was actually talking about this movie with my dad this morning, because he was really excited for me to see this movie, because he was telling me about going to see this movie for the, it was
in a the year theaters. After,
yeah, it was a year after he'd moved to, you know, like, Western capitalist Canada from... Yugoslavia, which at the time was not super into that stuff. So, but he was like, yeah, I was super impressed by the effects. Like, it just was a totally, it totally blew me away. And then I had to remind myself that nothing we saw, I mean, very little we saw last night was done with computers. Mm-hmm. It was friggin' puppets and shit. And that just, I don't know, it was amazing. It looked so good for that. Super impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the broodmother laying her eggs. That gross sack of...
That was gross.
What? Like, they did such a good job with that.
So nasty.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of if there was anything. Like, I actually found the first movie looks better and holds up better in terms of the visual effects. The second one had some really well-done parts, and then some parts that seemed much more...
Agreed.
Like, obvious, I guess.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I was, something I liked about the first one was the scenes, whenever they showed a computer screen, I thought it looked very good. Like, I thought they did a really good job with, simulating what would be on a screen in, I don't know, does that make any sense? Like, the graphics looked good for what they were doing at the time. I was impressed by that.
And one thing I also liked in both movies was the use of that motion detector device.
Mm.
I think some of the most effective scenes in Aliens were when they were looking at that and saying, like, oh, something's coming. Like, it should be right in front of us. Where is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, it's, like, in the room with us. And then they're like, no, it's not. And then they all look up and they're like, oh, shit. Like,
oh, shit. Yeah.
Yeah. We missed something.
Yeah. Especially when there's so many. In the second one.
The noise of an approaching... that noise hasn't changed a lot over the years. Like, that's a... I mean, I think that's a pretty common device used in some movies where... I'm trying to think. Jaws, I think, had a had the same thing. But yeah, that, like, beep, 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 beep. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It freaks me out just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, super effective.
Especially when you can't see it, right? Like,
yep.
Sound...
Yeah.
Like, it all comes back to, like, the use of sound and how well it was done, because, like, the sound indicating how close something is or how far away it is from you when you can't see it, like,
yep.
Yeah. That's why underwater shit is so scary, right? Like,
yeah, because your depth perception's off and you have no, and everything could be below or above you. And...
Yeah, yeah. Submarines give me the willies. Like, I cannot deal with submarines. Fuck.
Actually, this is interesting to think about also in terms of the difference between silence and how they use silence a lot in the first one, and the second one had very little silence, other than the time they were looking at that thing and listening for the beeps. Yeah.
Hmm. Ooh, I like that. Yes.
Yep. Ugh, I'm scared now.
Pam, have you played the Aliens game? Like the Alien game?
I haven't played it, but I know it uses that.
Yeah. Oh, really?
As like one of the main mechanics. Ugh. And I believe you can't even like walk and look at it. You have to specifically pull it up and you can't do anything else while you're looking at it.
Yeah, shit. Awesome. I want to play that because I was just thinking about that. And like people have said it's really scary. So I mean, like, I'll probably make it like 2 minutes into the game. But, like, I want to see how they did that compared to like how the movies did that.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've got two questions that sort of go into future films. Mm. Does anyone have anything else to say about Alien or Aliens before we go into those?
Glad I watched Aliens. Definitely does not hold a candle to the first one, at least in my opinion. I know people liked it, but they're virtually incomparable to me. That's how much more I preferred the first one. I'm glad I saw both, though, for sure.
The first one is, like, it's just Alien. Like, it's, like, you know, I would say, like, quintessential sci-fi horror viewing. Like, you know, it's something that you should see.
Yep.
For sure.
Yeah, I agree. I liked the first one better. It's just generally well executed in pretty much every way. I mean, I think Aliens is a lot of fun. I really enjoy that movie as well. Mm. But it's just, you know, the thing where bigger isn't always better. Yep. Like, one alien is scarier than 100 aliens.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, right, because the scariest parts in that movie were with the one broodmother. For me, at least. So, yeah. God. I keep thinking back and it's so horrible.
Okay, so X Huggles X wanted to know what we thought of Prometheus.
Am I the only one that's seen it?
I've seen it.
I have not seen it.
Oh, well, I don't know. I liked it, but going into it, I'm not like a super hardcore Alien franchise like big huge fan, so like having, because I know a lot of people were like freaking out that they were like, oh, they're trying to like remake Alien, like there's no way that you can do it, and like I agree, it's not an Alien movie. It like the only similarities I think are like the ship, see that again, like the curly ship, and of course the monster, right?
Oh, but, you like, see the curly ship again.
Yeah.
Okay, amazing. Now I really do need to watch the rest of them.
I don't know. I like the... Oh, God, I don't want to like spoil anything for you, Sarah, but like...
Oh, no, we'll watch it anyways, so...
Just the fact that it follows another... Like, a woman is kind of the main character again. I like that. And I, like, the shit that she does to get out of being, like... I really like that character because she fucking like uses the mechanical like surgery apparatus, gives herself a fucking C-section, stays herself back up.
Holy crap!
Yeah, like she's so badass.
That's disgusting. I love it.
Yeah. I didn't like seeing the xenomorph. I thought it was not as scary and not as like. Like intimidating as the first one, but like I really like that character, and I don't know, like the implications that there's like another civilization that found these xenomorphs first, tried to warn us, and we still went there anyway. Like,
oh man, ugh. That's cool.
Yeah, I like it. I like Prometheus, and yeah, I don't know. I know a lot of people didn't, but I did.
You and Prometheus and Avatar can go get married. No, I'm kidding.
It'll be an action-packed wedding.
Yep.
I thought it was an okay movie. Until the end, I was like, I don't understand how this is an Alien movie.
Yeah.
But because it seemed to focus on the architects, which I had no idea who they were, and even the monsters in that were like not like they didn't really look like the aliens, so I was just confused. And then I thought that they took the whole birth and pregnancy metaphor like super non-metaphorical anymore, and I thought that was kind of weird. But yeah, it was okay. I don't have a whole lot to say about Prometheus. It's been a while since
I feel like I gotta watch it again.
and then the last question comes from Duke0619, also known as Retro Nonsense. He says, Alien is my all-time favorite film, followed closely by Aliens. Do you hope Alien Covenant more follows the original horror masterpiece or the action-packed sequel, or maybe a mixture of the two?
I remember watching the trailer for the new one, and that's before I had seen any of these, and being like, well, this is going to be scary as fuck, because there's some shower scene with scary bits and business with alien stuffs. So I'm hoping it's going to be a horror movie like the other one, because it seems like it's going to be.
Yeah, it looks... I hope it's more like the horror movie than the action movie as well. It almost... I haven't read up on exactly what the concept is, but it looks almost like it's a... Like, is it the colony that gets destroyed in Alien 2? Because it's someone going to a new world to colonize it, and that ship is there again.
Oh, they're going as couples, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So I was wondering if it's that same planet as in...
LV-246? Look at me remembering stuff.
Look at you.
LV-246.
Yeah. I don't know.
I hope that it's more like Alien.
Yeah, and me too.
Based on the trailer, I don't have a whole lot of hope in this, but I hope that it's like, you know, quieter like Alien and not just, you know, violent and gross. I mean, the aliens can be gross, but the killing is less gross. But
so I just Googled it really quickly. In relation to, like, sequels and stuff, so it says Ridley Scott revealed he was planning two sequels to Prometheus, which would lead into the first Alien film. At the same time, he stated maybe there will even be a fourth film before we get back into the Alien storyline. And then he confirmed that Alien Covenant would be the first of three additional films in the Alien prequel series before linking up with the original Alien, and also stated that Prometheus would reveal who created the Xenomorphs.
Oh, wow.
So
it's before...
It's before.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe it is the colony. Maybe you're right. Now, like, I'd be interested in more films that, like, explore, like, the world that's been
set up.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, I mean, the Xenomorphs are scary, but, like, I want to see what else is going on. Because obviously there's some other shit happening.
Yeah, capitalism. Mm-hmm. That's the real fear. I said I wouldn't go back into this, but here we are. Capitalism, the real horror of sci-fi horror movies. It's that you heard it here. That's my message.
Yeah.
Actually, I want to ask you, so at breakfast this morning with my dad, we were talking about our favorite sci-fi movies, and because he was like, Alien's so good, like, it's so hard to make good sci-fi, there's no, you know, it's virtually impossible, why does anyone even try to do it? And I was wondering if either of you had seen Midnight Special.
No.
Okay, so that's my next recommendation for you guys to watch is see Midnight Special, because I thought... I think I've only seen maybe five good sci-fi movies in my entire life.
Yeah, sci-fi is, it's hard to pull off well, but I'm always looking for more sci-fi movies or space horror movies. So if anyone has recommendations, hit me up on Twitter, tell me what to watch.
Mm-hmm. Same. Mm-hmm.
All right, so I think that brings the Alien discussion to a close. Thank you so much, Sarah, for watching the movies with me and coming on to talk to us about it.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for cooking us dinner yesterday. It was delicious.
You're welcome.
Pam's a really good cook, everybody who listens to the show, if you don't know. It's really good.
It's true. So good.
thanks. I was, anytime you want to watch something that I've never watched, I love when people do this, so... Like, feel free to sit me down and watch things. It's good. Good to do.
Awesome.
Okay.
You want to tell people where they can find you if they want to learn about the evils of capitalism?
Yeah, sure. my Twitter is SerinWow, SerinWow. So yeah, come hang out and join your local DSA chapter. Thank you.
Riley, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kaleri. It's K-A-L-E-R-I with an underscore.
And you can find me on Twitter at Josyla underscore or on YouTube, where my channel is Cannot Be Tamed. If you have any feedback, questions, people, or topics you'd like to hear on future episodes, you can reach out at mediamavenscast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at @_mediamavens. And as always, if you like the show and haven't done it yet, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to us. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.